I'm Will Rycroft, and in this podcast series, I've been taking you inside the publishing process so that you can hear not only from the author about writing their book, but also from those who first read it and helped shape it and put a lovely cover on the front of it. In this episode, we take things a stage further, because The Other Black Girl by Zakiya Delilah-Harris is actually set within the world of publishing, and Zakiya herself worked within the editorial department of Knopf Doubleday in New York. Whilst working there as an assistant editor, something happened which gave her an idea for the novel we can now read. And like all great power moves, it happened in the bathrooms.
The spark that really ignited my desire to start writing happened in the bathrooms of Penguin Random House, where all the magic happens, right? I was washing my hands in the bathroom, minding my own business, and then another Black woman came out of the stall, started washing her hands as well. And I just remember, I'd never seen her before. And I knew I'd never seen her because, of course, as one of two Black people working on the floor at the time, I was very aware all the time of who was around me, of what faces I was seeing. And so this Black woman really surprised me, and I was excited. I wondered who she was. I sensed she wasn't an author visiting because I believe she had a work badge with her. So I was really excited about seeing her, but then we didn't have any kind of conversation or anything, even though I was very, I think, open to that. I was looking at her, trying to catch her eye, and nothing happened. And I went back to my desk, and I just remember thinking less about her and more about me and that feeling of joy I felt when I saw her. And it really made me think about, you know, the fact that I was one of two Black people working on the floor, and I would sometimes tune that out. A lot of times I could tune that out, do my job, but then of course I was hyper aware of it in many situations. And so this was one specific moment where that was in my face. And I went back to my desk and started writing. I started writing, I think, on my stationery for work instead of doing the job that I was supposed to be doing. And yeah, I mean, but there are a lot of other things that led to that moment. I knew writing was my first love, and so that had been bubbling for a while. But that moment in the bathroom was really what set things off for me to start writing the book.
And that literally sent you to your desk to pick up a pen straight away and to get stuff down.
Yeah, I mean, I had this idea, and I mean, I will say I messaged, so I would G-chat with one of my good friends from my MFA program that I did before I was in publishing, and we would sometimes message each other ideas for stories or TV shows, just like creative ideas, you know, and I was like, and I still have a screenshot from this conversation because of everything that followed, but I was basically like, hey, I just got this idea for a novel, like two Black girls working in publishing or white workplace. I can't remember exactly what I said, but, and one of them is weird, like, not to give too much away of the plot, but that was the main thread. And I started writing the chapter one of Nella sitting in her cubicle smelling this new smell, right? In my cubicle. The first sign was the smell of cocoa butter. When it initially crept around the wall of her cubicle, Nella was too busy filing a stack of pages at her desk, aligning each and every one so that the manuscript was perfectly flush. Only when it inched up her nostrils and latched onto a deep part of her brain did she stop what she was doing and lift her head with sudden interest. She inhaled again, craning her neck upward so that all she could see were the gray and white tiles that lined the ceiling. No, she'd been correct. That was cocoa butter, all right. And it wasn't just any cocoa butter. It was brown butter, her favorite brand of hair grease. Nella looked around. When she was sure the coast was clear, she stuck her hand into her thick black hair and pulled a piece of it as close to her nose as she could. The brown butter smell wasn't coming from her own hair. What she was smelling was fresh, a coat applied within the last hour or so, she guessed. This meant one of two things. One of her white colleagues had started using brown butter, or, more likely, since she was pretty sure none of them had accidentally stumbled into the natural hair care aisle, there was another Black girl on the 13th floor.
Now, those of us who've been working from home instead of the office for the past year might admit that we miss it a tiny bit, but they seldom seem like hotbeds of intrigue. And yet for those who don't work in an office, there is a certain fascination, as Erin Kelly, author of the thriller Watch Her Fall, explains.
Because I don't go to work, I just think offices are incredibly exciting, sexy places. I think the opposite of what people who actually do work in offices think. And I'm really, to me, office politics and the daily life of offices is just such an exotic territory. And it's New York publishing, which is really interesting and exciting to me. I visited my New York publisher a few years ago and I felt like I was on a movie set because it was just so thrilling. And also publishing. Most authors are loath to admit it, but they don't really understand how publishing works. There is a certain degree to which I think it's healthy to keep the machinations of the industry behind the curtain, a bit like, you know, like the Wizard of Oz.
This experience of working in a cubicle and you kind of have privacy, but you really don't have privacy. Everyone can hear you. Everyone can smell what everyone else is eating. Like, gossip is truly just like spread so easily. You can hear everything. And especially when you're an entry-level employee, like Nella Rogers is, you don't have an office usually. And to me, that really signifies like how little kind of autonomy you have in a lot of ways when you have these assistant jobs, and especially within publishing, because it's kind of hard sometimes to feel like you're not a cog in the wheel a little bit, but you're still a very important cog, right? Because an editorial assistant is actually one of, I think, the few positions where you are in touch with every single person of the involved in the process of creating a book. So you talk to the agent, you talk to the author, you talk to, of course, your boss, the editor, but then you're also talking to publicity or talking to production, such an important team. So you're really forward facing, but you're also behind the scenes too at the same time. And so it's such an interesting job. And I mean, I really enjoyed a lot of the aspects of it. I love editing. I love talking to people. I've worked a lot of service jobs over the years as well before working in publishing. But there's also, it's such an interesting world. I think that it's easy to get really pulled into it and kind of forget that the books are really, really important and getting them out to everyone is really important. But sometimes you have to kind of turn off your emotions in order to make sure that this thing happens. You know, that you kind of have to leave a part of your personal taste sometimes at home for the greater good of making sure a book gets sold. There's just a lot of politics that are involved as well. And I know for me, when I was looking around the table, as one of very, 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 very few Black people, the number of people at the table, the people who are in power, controlling these books, controlling what people read, I was a little, I thought it was worrisome that there's such few diversity culturally, but also class too. And I think I love publishing. I just feel like there are a lot of hypocrisies, and I think a lot of people who aren't familiar with the publishing industry don't necessarily realize like who's at the table, who's actually controlling these conversations. Like, that's really important to think about.
It is really important, and we'll come back to that idea a little later. But first, what happens when you send a novel that skewers some aspects of the publishing industry out to publishers? Editor Alexis Kirschbaum remembers the moment the email came through.
I got the email, and I loved the sound of it. It just, like, it talked about race and the publishing industry, and I was really excited to read it because that's an area that I'm very interested in publishing in. And this sounded unlike other things that I'd read. And I think I also was very curious about the fact that it took place in publishing. I'm like, ooh. So I was just immediately, I sort of tore it open and tore through it. I really just loved it. I mean, I think it does have sort of straightforward satire in bits, but it's also, it has horror, it's absurd, it has suspense, it has a bit of fantasy. It really, I felt when I was reading it, like I was watching movies like Get Out or Parasite, where there's like such a clever manipulation of expectations that sort of broaden out the way you think about situations. And I think what Zakiya does incredibly well in this novel is the way she sort of situates people's realities. So she'll have some, like one character's sense of the absurd is another person's nightmare. And as you're reading it, you realize that that's sort of, it's sort of an elaborate joke, which is also a tragedy. And I think she plays with that sort of serio-ludic throughout the novel. And she does it so effectively, because it's never, you know, sanctimonious. It's incredibly fun. I laughed so many times when I was reading this, but it also manages to be full of suspense. And the way that she characterizes, in particular, gaslighting within the novel, it reminded me of Rosemary's Baby. The way that character is so, she's so gaslit the entire time, and she can't tell what's real and what's not.
So I should say I am so into horror. I love horror, sci-fi, thrillers, like worlds that, especially when those worlds and those stories are in a lot of ways very similar to our world, but then there's something that's off, something that's not quite right. I love going down that rabbit hole. And so, I mean, Get Out was a prime example. I remember seeing that movie by myself one like Saturday morning because I'd been hearing all these good things about it. And I remember seeing it, being amazed by it, and then talking to my dad about it for like 2 hours on the phone, like analyzing it, because it worked on so many levels. And I felt like it was able to get at certain topics that are so nuanced in terms of, you know, white liberals, but I voted for Obama twice, kind of like those conversations were so real. And I really thought it got at the dangers of a different kind of racism that, you know, we have the blatant racism. We talk about Confederate statues all the time. We talk about all of these, the flag, the Confederate flag, but this kind of subtle microaggressive racism that is harder to pinpoint depending on where it's coming from and who's around, but it's also very insidious. And so I think that the genre element of Get Out was able to give us both the serious things, the really important things we need to talk about with these microaggressions, but also it's just such a ride that it's just an enjoyable watch, and really, really unexpected. And so I wanted to do that with my book. I knew immediately, I mentioned it, you know, there's something's awry with the relationship between Nell and Hazel, I would just say. And I knew that something would be some kind of genre element. I'm trying to tiptoe around. And for me, that was so fun. It was something that really felt natural for me from the get-go. Because again, I love Get Out. I love the Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, like all of those kind of off stories really bring me joy. And I also think it's one of those things that I hope that the element of genre really, really inspires even more conversations, conversations that would be difficult to have if this were a straightforward literary book that's, doesn't take a curve into otherworldly territory. I think that it would be more serious and maybe not as fun or easy to talk to as I hope it is now.
I think personally, I'm very interested in this kind of new trend that I see in movies and actually in music, and now it's happening in literature as well, where it sort of takes a familiar genre and then does some social analysis. So I'd been looking for a novel like this, which you know, I hadn't seen. So I was just so excited, and I read it. And then the next thing I had to do was get everybody in-house excited about it. And frankly, that wasn't hard. I mean, it's just so obviously like incredibly timely, incredibly like important, but also a extremely entertaining and a, you know, fun to read, and so artful and surprising. So I talked to everybody at the acquisitions meeting about it and sort of did my pitch. And everybody around the table was just like, we have to get this book, you know. So that was great. And then we jumped on a Zoom call with Sakia, and it was just sort of like a big love-in. And I think we all looked around the call, and everybody had the same kind of passion and understanding of what she was trying to do. And it was, she sort of has this specialness about her that you just want. I think the auction was like 15 offers or something. And it's always very, you know, when you really want something, the prospect of losing it makes you very, very anxious. So it actually was not fun to buy this book. I hated buying this book because like the specter of losing it is there the whole time. But thankfully we bought it.
And having secured the book and worked through the editorial and production process, it then came time to share it with early readers. So we return now to author Erin Kelly, who was one of those. As someone who receives 20 to 30 proofs a week for consideration, what was it about The Other Black Girl that made it one she had to read?
So I try to give every book a chance, but some books just leap to the top of the pile. And The Other Black Girl did for several reasons. First of all was the title. It's instantly intriguing. I'm quite fascinated by titles. My titles have changed as my career's gone on. And I think the most successful ones, they've got a clue about the narrative in the title. The Other Black Girl suggests the story. It really contains within it female rivalry. I knew it wasn't going to be the kind of book that I write because I'm a white woman and I choose not to write about cultures that I don't inhabit because I know that I won't get the nuances right. And also, of course, to make space for own voices. So I knew it was going to be something I couldn't write, which is always really attractive to me. I knew it was fresh story about female rivalry, which is just sounded juicy. It's a really striking cover as well. It's just yellow background, black, super simple font, and a picture of an afro comb with one prong broken. So, and there's something thrillerish about it, but the book wasn't pegged as a thriller, psychological thriller. It was pegged as something maybe a bit more uncategorizable as psychological thrillers, which is the kind of book I write. So that's another tick in the box because, again, something I couldn't have read. Just the same as when I go to a restaurant, I want to order something I couldn't. Every book that I am sent by other publishers, I do pick up and I will read the blurb and I'll think about the cover. So already The Other Black Girl had made it through various hurdles and was on the list. But if I open the book and the voice isn't right, I'm not going to read on no matter how enticing it is. But Nella's voice just leapt off the page from the first chapter, and it didn't stay in her viewpoint for a long time, but I was just instantly invested in her. I was there in her cubicle, the kind of tensions of the office and her ambition and her sincerity and all of her frustrations just made her come alive to me, and I just had to know what was going on. And there is intrigue from the beginning as well, because we know that there is conspiracy afoot, and we aren't sure how much of this is Nella's paranoia, you know, because she has been subjected to this barrage of microaggressions for so long that she's almost been gaslit by the culture she works in. So there was a tease of unreliable narrator in there, which is one of my favourite things. But then also the sense that she is right to be intrigued and worried. I was just desperate to find out what was going to happen. And so subtly, I didn't realise it was happening. I had a creeping feeling that this book was so much bigger than it had appeared to be when I began. And here I'm going to stop talking because I don't want to spoil it, but it's as though you're driving an amazing sports car. So you're already having a really thrilling, smooth ride. And then all of a sudden the sports car grows wings and becomes an aeroplane and suddenly you're flying. It does this incredible thing towards the end of the book that just took my breath away and impressed me so much because, you know, I like to think that I can spot a twist a mile off, but nobody is going to see how this pans out. And yet when you go back to page one, as I did, you will see that the conclusion to the book and the big reveal is there on every page. It really, you know, the paper is permeated with it almost. And it's just an incredible story. It's just a really fantastic read. And that was the point at which I became evangelical. And I really want to talk to other people about this book. And I think that's the sign of a really exciting writer, when I don't just want to make other people read the book. Sometimes I'll do that with friends. You know, I say, you've got to read this. I think you will love this book. I've already given my proof copy to another friend and I said, I want you to read this book. And then as soon as you finish the last page, I want you to call me. I just really want to talk to other people about it. And I can't wait until everybody else is reading it, because then I'm going to be able to.
One of the striking things Erin mentioned there was the cover. And as Zakiya told me, together with the thrill of seeing a cover design for her own book, there was the satisfaction of knowing what meaning was contained within that image.
I have many Afropics. I have these Afropic earrings now. I just, for me, going natural, like 6 years ago, I cut off my straight hair and I've been natural for 6 years. And so I think it's just incredible. I think someone who picks up this book and looks at it will just immediately see the blackness, but then also I think there's just so much beauty in the teeth being broken, because that really represents, of course, just all the different schools of black thought. I think how fragmented sometimes our relationships within the black community can be with one another. So I'm just it's just gorgeous. But yeah, the Bloomsbury sent, I mean, they sent us, me and my agent, this a proposed design, a version of this, very similar to this. And let's see, I think even just a few months after we started working together last summer.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was sitting in the car. I remember when I saw it, I was driving back to New York with my mom. And I just remember screaming, because it's such a cool moment. I remember being on the other side. Once again, I know I keep talking about it, but to have been on the other side of cover mock-ups as an editorial assistant, and then to now be on this other side of getting one for my own book, was just incredible. And I just loved the design so much. I just thought it really spoke to, again, that the beauty, and also just the fragmented, kind of complicated, textured, if you will, relationships within the black community. So just love it.
That's just another example of the way in which this book speaks directly to black women. Were you always focused on that when writing it, or were you worrying about making this a book that would appeal to as wide an audience as possible?
I was and I wasn't. I mean, I when I wrote this, I was really conscious of my own experiences as a black woman in publishing, but also just moving throughout the world. And I really wanted this book to speak to that group of people, especially. I really worried about getting that right. And of course you can't speak to, I think the whole point of this book, and one of the points is that we're not a monolith. Like, black women are so diverse. We have so many different, but I really wanted to just speak to that idea that we can be in a lot of different forms. But yeah, I mean, I think every writer's dream is that the book will appeal to everyone. And I know I was really concerned about genre aspect when I was trying to find an agent, because it is hard to categorize. Like, even with the comps, like, you don't normally give a movie comp in publishing. Like, and when I wrote that, in some of my query letters, I was like, well, we'll see what happens. Like, I can't think of another example that feels more apt or more timely than Get Out on that side. So I definitely have really been appreciating that this book has made or has gotten the attention of, you know, Black readers. Both of my publishers, both in the US and the UK, have really done a wonderful job of making sure the book finds Black readers, but also like thriller readers and horror readers, where we've been able to find those readers and those channels as well. So it's been really, really exciting and kind of exceeded my expectations a lot, because I just know how this all works, right? I know the sausage, yeah, how it gets made.
We touched on the important conversations that should be had about who makes the decisions within publishing and how change is affected. And I wonder if you feel that you personally felt more able to push that forwards as a writer or as somebody who was working within publishing?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I definitely think it's more the former. I've always wanted to be a writer since I was very young. But I also knew, of course, that writing and being able to support yourself just from writing is really, really hard to do. very hard. And so I did my MFA, I mentioned, at the New School, actually, in nonfiction writing. And then after that, I did, of course, publishing. And I thought I could do both for a while. And as an editorial assistant, I kind of could. I mean, I was still barely sleeping, doing a lot of work early in the morning on the train, always working and always reading, but like I could do that. But then there was a moment where I was promoted to an assistant editor about 2 years in, which is huge. Getting promoted, I think, anywhere in publishing, as I touch upon in the book, is very difficult to do. But I just remember getting assigned the book to work on and being not happy at all about it. And I think that, yeah, for me was the moment where I was like, okay, this is not the thing I want to be doing. I want to be writing. And so I know that that desire really was what was pushing me to write this book. And I actually, you know, when I started writing it, I didn't really necessarily have publishing in my mind as like it was going to be a book really talking about publishing in these ways and the problems with diversity in publishing. I knew there would be talking about problems with diversity in general, because when I had those two characters in mind, these two Black women in this house, I knew that their relationship was going to be fraught, and I knew why that relationship would be fraught. The more I wrote, it's because of this environment. But really, their relationship was my main focus when I started writing, and everything else just filled in. So I do now, of course, on the other side of things, I am really excited that I found ways to really get at the publishing industry, but also just all of the industries, media, film, like all of them have these similar problems within their worlds of how we talk about diversity, meaningful diversity, and all of those things. So it's just been really fun getting feedback about that too.
And has it been weird to leave that world and then come back to it as an author?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I feel like every other person in publishing really wants to write as well. So when I quit, I made the mistake of telling a few people, like, I think I actually told more than a few people when they asked. I wasn't just going around being like, I'm writing a novel, because that's just setting yourself up for all of whatever comes. But I did say it, because part of it for me was really, I need that push. I need to have that accountability thing happen. And so to finish the book that year and then link up with my agent, my wonderful agent, Stephanie Delman, and then to a few months after that be querying people that I had worked with was insane. We sent it to one of the I worked at two imprints, Knopf and Doubleday. And so I did have former coworkers who read the book and were like, oh my God, your book's in on submission. And it's such a weird feeling. And then going back to Tangan Random House, being in the lobby, seeing the front desk, people that I had seen, had worked with, and then going in the elevators the way that I used to go to work every day for 2.5-3 years was so surreal. And just really, I don't know, I think at that moment, I just felt really proud. And I think for me, I don't get proud often of myself. I think I move the goalposts a lot, but in those moments, in those days especially, I was just like, this feels really good.
And to finish off, we return to editor Alexis Kirschbaum and what she sees in the future for this exciting new voice.
I think that this is going to be huge. And I think her next book, it will be a matter of trying not to live up to the success of this one, but to do something different and to go another route entirely. But I definitely think she's a writer.
And are you prepared to get into another hotly contested auction?
Oh no, she's ours now. So I hope it wouldn't go to auction. I hope she'd just want to stay with us, because it's really been such a joy working with her. She's someone, because she worked in publishing, she understands how thankless it can be.
Yeah.
And how hard we all work, sort of really based on passion and belief and getting behind a book and really working extra hours to make sure something succeeds. And she's so grateful and like polite, and it's just so unusual to have that from an author. She's just absolutely wonderful.
Huge thanks to Zakia for joining me from New York, to all at Bloomsbury Books, and to Erin Kelly for sharing their thoughts. The Other Black Girl is out now in your local Waterstones, and signed copies are available on waterstones.com. Our next episode will feature our first foray into non-fiction, as we look at the moment which sent shockwaves through the sports world, and I speak with former West Indies cricketer Michael Holding about being a catalyst for change and what's required to make a more equal society for all. See you soon.